Hey, it's Canzano. I appreciate you listening to the podcast. Make sure you subscribe and give us some feedback. Also, the Bald-Faced Truth podcast, it's brought to you by Shoe Mill, my favorite shoe store with locations in Portland and Salem and online at shoemill.com. Shoe Mill, where we put the world at your feet.
Initialize sequence.
Welcome to the Baldcast, a production of John Canzano's Bald-Faced Truth.
How are you, man? You doing all right?
Man, fantastic. How are you?
I'm well. I also know that we got Ken Go, the Oregonian, who is on hold. Can you pop him on air for me?
Oh, yeah, sure. No problem.
Can you do me a favor? Ken Go, how you doing, buddy?
Good. How are you, John?
I'm well. I had a lump in my throat when I read your Lute Olson piece this morning, and for people who don't know, Lute Olson passed away, a legendary Arizona basketball coach. I want to get your personal perspective with that, because I think it's just one of those great stories that humanizes somebody that we all know as a basketball coach, but didn't get a chance to meet him like you did.
Yeah, you know, he could be a fairly intimidating figure. When you were a reporter, he was very tall. Well, maybe not compared to some basketball players, but compared to the average person, he's probably 6'5". Ramrod straight, had a fire in his eyes, and he occasionally would feud with members of the media. I know he and Greg Hansen, who's a very good sports columnist in Tucson, went for several years where Olson did not talk to him. So he was prickly, but I was down there a lot in the early 2000s because I was a Pac-10 at large reporter, and during basketball seasons, Arizona was just really good. Lute's team, they won one national championship, and they were in several Final Fours. They were just very good. So he got to know who I was a little bit, partly because I was there a lot, and partly because I think he recruited Portland some there. The Stoudemires, Damon and Salim both played there and starred there, and he had several other Oregon players, and he recruited Portland. So he was always nice to me. But it really, that's what it was. It was a coach-reporter relationship. But in 2000, my son, Justin, I think some of your readers will know this, had a subdural hematoma, a head injury playing high school football, and was very seriously hurt. He was in a coma for 2 weeks at OHSU and then went into inpatient rehab at Manual for 6 weeks. And, you know, it was fairly widely known at the time, so we got lots of mail. But one piece of mail that came in that was unsolicited was from Lute Olson. And the first, it was a handwritten note to me. And I wrote back and said it looked like, you know, Justin was out of danger, and thanked him for the note. And then he started writing Justin. And again, it was, you know, they were handwritten notes, so he actually had to sit down at his desk and do it. It wasn't dictated to a secretary or an aide or, you know, an assistant coach or some flunky in the program wasn't doing it for him. He wrote these notes, and Justin would write him back, so it was a pretty cool thing. Justin was always pretty surprised. Lute Olson wrote me again. So people now may not realize what a big name he was then. He was one of the elite, you know, in college coaching. So I was touched by it. And I know Justin was too.
It really is, you know, at that time too, and you know, I know Justin, and I've known you for years, and I can tell that, you know, you guys have all come through that process in a healthy way, and you got a great kid. But I also know about, you know, my, having kids myself, that it must have been incredibly traumatic for your family, and especially as a dad, right? That here's your kid and you maybe feel a little helpless to kind of help him along, and you start getting help from places that you never expected it, like Lute Olson and Rick Neuheisel, who as well, I believe, was, you know, kind to Justin and empathetic to your family at that time.
Yeah, very similar story with Rick Neuheisel, who was at Washington then. And you know, Washington and Oregon were not friends, particularly during the Neuheisel era. But yeah, Neuheisel wrote to me, and he wrote to Justin. He actually sent Justin a guitar songbook and was trying to get him to play, learn to play. He said, we'll play together sometime. I mean, it was that kind of stuff. And it's people you don't necessarily think, you know, would act that way. Coaches, for whatever reason, have these public personas they take on. And Neuheisel certainly had one as sort of a Weasley, do whatever he could to win, sort of sneaky. But that wasn't the Rick Neuheisel I know, particularly in this instance. He was genuine, and he and Justin developed a relationship. You know, not that they met really, but writing back and forth. And these guys are busy guys, so it takes some time to sit down and write something out to a kid you've never met. And you know, the other guy who did something totally unexpected, well, a lot of people did, but one that I think will resonate with your listeners was Dennis Erickson, who was then coaching at Oregon State. One day when Justin was in his coma at OHSU, Erickson just showed up. No announcement, no sports information person leading the way, just Erickson and a signed football. It was amazing.
Ken Goh of the Oregonian with us. Getting letters from Lute Olson and a guy who, yeah, same. I have the same sort of opinion of him. Like in a news conference or in an interview, he could be steely. He could be a little cold. He could be icy. Like, you know, if some, you know, he could challenge a writer. And I saw him as sort of a stern guy. But you see the human side of him at a time like that. What did that mean to you and your family, your wife in particular, when, you know, he's reaching out going, hey, I care about this kid who I've never met.
Yeah, well, I think it's at times like this, you just understand we're all part of a human family, and those guys are too. And you're right, they have these images, these public personas that, in ways that we think of them, they're sort of stereotypical, but they're people underneath them, and they have their own fears and loves and hates, and they're not perfect people, but there's a connection, a human connection that we have with them. And in these instances, they showed that connection to us. And yeah, it's a lifeboat when you're in a situation like that, when it's a life and death situation with your kid, and people of that stature are pausing from their lives. And like I said before, they lead busy lives. And they have a lot of people tugging on their time. When they take some of that time and do something nice, not because they're going to get something out of it, but because it's just a nice thing to do, that sort of really reaffirms your faith in human nature.
Ken Goh of the Oregonian with us. You know, there's a lot of parents now that look at football and see it as a dangerous sport. You've been through a nightmare scenario with your own son in football. How has that shaped your perception of kids playing youth football, high school football?
Yeah, I mean, that's something we really grappled with at the time, and I grappled with afterwards as I continued as a sports writer covering football. It's a dangerous sport, and I think it's important if people are going to play it that they go into it with their eyes wide open and understand that there's an element of risk in the sport. That said, it's more risky to let your kid drive a car. I think at some point, as your kids get older, and particularly as they get into their teens and their late teens, you can't keep them bubble wrapped. They have a right to live their lives too. And that might mean playing football. It might mean climbing a mountain. It definitely probably will entail driving a car. I mean, you're going to send them away to school. They're going to do things at school maybe that you wouldn't necessarily approve, but that, you know, that's part of the learning process, and that's how they grow and become an adult. And my grandson also played high school football and had a great experience, and I think it helped shape his life going forward in a good way. So I would never tell people not to play. I just say, you know, understand there's a risk when you do it.
Ken Goh of the Oregonian with us. You know, you've been covering sports in this state for so long, you never could have foreseen anything like a pandemic. What do you make of what's going on and all the conversation now about the Pac-12? When will they play? Will this season matter? How will we look back on this? I got to know, for a guy who's been here for about 100 years covering sports, what does it look like?
Well, it looks weird, you know. For what it's worth, I think the Pac-12 made the right decision. Maybe it'll turn out that they were overly cautious, but I think it, when you're talking about people's health, it's better to be overly cautious than undercautious. I saw a story just a couple days ago that a whole position group at Oklahoma tested positive, and with something that's this tricky and this contagious. Yeah, not a lot of young people die of it, but some of the young people that recover have health effects that linger and are very serious. And some of the young people who recover and have it pass it on to someone else who may be at greater risk, maybe an older friend or relative or fan or coach who's got an underlying condition. And then it becomes very dangerous. And I think when you're talking about people's health, the best thing to do is to be safe. It's a tough deal. I mean, there's people who are losing their jobs over this. You wrote about all the people at the Pac-12 who've either been furloughed or laid off because there's no football games. And that's hard. I mean, these are good people. They work hard. They've got mortgages and families and dreams, and you lose a paycheck. That is really hard. And there is an economic fallout to this, but I think when you balance it, the economics versus people's lives, you can recover from an economic blow. You can find another job or you can figure out another way to make a living. You can't recover from death. And or if you have a lifelong heart condition that you develop out of having COVID and recovering from it, you know, that's worse. So, you're right. It's very strange. In my 150 years or whatever as a sports writer, I've never seen anything like this. But I think, you know, I'm firmly behind what the Pac-12 did. I think the conferences that are playing are going to regret it. I think I'd be surprised if any of them finish the season.
Ken Goh of the Oregonian. Follow him on Twitter at Ken Goh. Read him on Oregon Live. Ken, thank you for sharing that story. I've retweeted Ken Goh's piece about Lute Olson this morning. I think it's a must read if you are a Pac-12 fan or a human being at all. Ken, thank you for sharing that.
Yeah, thanks for having me, John.
All right, there he is, Ken Goh of the Oregonian. I never know where these conversations are going to take us. His son, Justin, near and dear to my heart, he's come into the studio. He is job shadowed. He has hung out with Alabama Adriana, and he's a listener of the show. I have no doubt Justin is listening to the show right now. He might be like listener number one of the radio show. I'm sure he bores his dad to stitches around the dinner table. You know what Canzano said today? Ken's like, I sat by him at the game. I don't need to hear this. But interesting comments, too, from a parent who has been through what essentially amounts to a horrific situation with a kid playing football, and now whose job it is to cover football. And you go from a traumatic brain injury to your son who is involved in a high school game, and you find yourself probably deeply conflicted in covering sports moving forward. A lot of people looking to weigh in on this. We're going to take one phone call, and I'll take more after the break. Gary's in Damascus. Gary, welcome to the program. What's on your mind?
Thank you, John. I have a question. Youth sports is on my mind. I'm a local coach. I have a club for swimming, water polo, basketball, and futsal. And I was curious what your thoughts were on, like, why the kids in this the Tri-County area aren't able to open up when you know the OHA had a document out there that's saying that K through 12 can participate in sports safely, and other states are doing that, but Oregon seems to be left behind.
Yeah, and I think there's a lot of people wondering, a lot of people frustrated right now. Here's what I know. I know the governor of the state of Oregon was being conservative from the get. A lot of us were frustrated that there was no direction coming from the governor's office. What I found out in the last 48 hours is that the sports entities in this state really were lobbying the governor, trying to get the governor not to include sports directives, at least for the Timbers, the Thorns, the Blazers, Oregon, Oregon State, Portland, Portland State. They didn't want their directives to be lumped in with the counties. So what I think one of the negative byproducts that happened out of that, and I think they were well-intentioned, because what they were trying to defend against was, okay, you know, a college football or basketball program is not the same thing as a shopping mall, even though you might have 100 people in the same area. So let's not lump together whether or not we can meet as a team or whether or not we can hold weight training with the rest. And so what I think happened, one of the negative things that I think happened out of that, was the governor left sports out of that initial guidance. Remember that? We were all frustrated, puzzled, scratching our heads, going, well, why didn't they include youth sports or practices? I found out in the last 24 to 48 hours that the reason for that was that the governor was getting some pressure to not include that stuff, because there was, at least at that time, well-intentioned people saying, hey, sports are not the same as a shopping mall or a movie theater. You know, you have teams and coaches that are in charge. I think it's a great discussion. I want more of this discussion. 503-417-7575. Take some phone calls. What's on your mind? Youth sports. Gary in Damascus had raised a good point about kids in the state falling behind. I also, you know, it's interesting, in the state of Utah today, I've said this several times this week, I spoke to Panay Sewell's father in the last week a couple of times. He's coaching high school football in the state of Utah. His team will play their third game tonight, this Friday night game. So, he says it's just different. They're distancing. They're doing some different things there to keep kids safe. And, of course, the parents are not gathering in the stands in large numbers, and they're getting through it. I know a lot of parents are out there are frustrated. I also know the governor is probably feeling like she's in a tricky spot, like to order a blanket directive. Big difference between counties, county to county, on infection rates. Certainly don't want to open up some of the counties here in the Portland metropolitan area that are more populated in the same way that you'd open up others. But I know parents are frustrated. Kids are frustrated. Everyone feels like everyone's fallen behind. I'll go back to what Ken Go said in his last call. The first thing, though, is you got, as a parent, your first thing should be keep your kids safe. We don't know the effects of this. And maybe just look at this as an opportunity or a season to do the things that you need to do with your kids to connect on a one-on-one level. And certainly I think some programs like the Callers programs are safe to do. I think there's some things that are safe to do in small groups. I think you've seen teams already start to do that stuff. I've even seen little league teams that are playing games. I got to be honest with you. I was at a field recently just hanging out with my kids, brought a soccer ball. I looked up. There's a little league game going on. Not sanctioned. Two teams playing. Let's go to Matt, who's in Beaverton. Matt is called in. What's on your mind, Matt?
I'm just wondering when the detriment to young kids, like I have a son, you have a young daughter that are in kindergarten, first grade, when does that outweigh the lives of old people, which it's terrible because I have no answers for it, but yeah. It's definitely affecting the kids.
Yeah, I hate to make that decision, right? All right, at what point does the detriment to a young person's education equal a human life? I would say almost never, because I think I am viewing this, and I hope a lot of people out there are viewing this, as this is a short-term problem. I think kids are pretty resilient. I think the distance learning is really tough on families. I get it. But I think ultimately, for those of you out there that have lost loved ones to this virus, I can't speak for those people, but I am tempted to just say, like, there is no point in which that becomes an acceptable trade. It's unfortunate, and I know it's going to cause a lot of us to have to work really hard on trying to educate our
kids. We interrupt this broadcast with a special announcement from the Bald Face.
Sorry to interrupt the podcast, but if you want to listen to more of the Bald Face Truth Radio Show, including more of this segment that you're listening to, make sure you subscribe on SoundCloud and iTunes to the Bald Face Truth Radio Show. Thanks for listening.